Hello, my name is Hannah Tenenbaum. Welcome to Torah Yemecha Parsha with the OU. Today studying Parshat Toldot. Toldot tells the story of Rivka and Yitzchak's barrenness and subsequent pregnancy, in which the twins struggle in Rivka's womb, representing the future. The Torah then describes the birth of the twins, their childhood, and the sale of the birthright by Esav to Yaakov. Yitzchak and Rivka go to Gerar because of a famine, and Rivka almost ends up in Avimelech's palace like Sarah. When Yitzchak is concerned that he is ready to die, he decides to bless Esav. Yaakov is dressed by his mother in Esav's clothes, and he receives the blessing instead of Esav. Let's begin with a short review from last week. After passing the test for kindness, Avraham's servant convinces Rivka's family to allow her to return to the land of Canaan with him. Rivka is brought by Avram's servant to marry Yitzchak. As they approach, Rivka sees Yitzchak first in a pattern that will repeat. She understands what's about to happen before Yitzchak and immediately falls off the camel and covers her face with a scarf. This reaction demonstrates the unique relationship that Yitzchak and Rivka had, one based on awe and perhaps even fear. The Torah only reports one conversation that they had with each other as compared to the many conversations of the other four couples. Yet, the Torah does make it a point to stress that Yitzchak loved Rivka. Our Parsha begins noting that Yitzchak had married Rivka, the daughter of Betuel, and they are childless. Vayetar Yitzchak l'Hashem l'nochach ishto ki akarahi. Vayetar lo Hashem vatahar Rivka ishto. 25:21. Yitzchak pleaded with Hashem on behalf of his wife because she was barren, and Hashem responded to his plea, and his wife Rivka conceived. The Gemara in Yevamot 64a suggests that since the verse states that Yitzchak prayed lenochach, opposite his wife, that he too was infertile, hence a second wife would not have solved the problem. Another interpretation of this term indicates that Rivka too was involved in this prayer service, Yitzchak in one corner of the room and she opposite him in the other. This approach turns Rivka into the only foremother who prays to receive a child. The Medrash indicates that this couple prayed incessantly all these years, never dismaying. Yitzchak was 40 when he married Rivka and 60 when the sons were born. What transpired during those 20 years? Were they constantly praying? Were they considering trying the maid servant trick? Maybe adoption? We know nothing about those long, painful years and don't know which model of barren woman Rivka grasped. There are a number of unique explanations for Rivka's barrenness. When Rivka was leaving her father's home, she was blessed in 24:60. Our sister, may you be multiplied to thousands. Achotenu atayei le'alfei rivava. By the fact that it takes 20 years, it is apparent that her family's blessing had no influence. Rivka might have come from a questionable background, but it's totally her righteousness and her fine character that allow her to become the continuation of Sarah. Instead of bringing in a second wife, Yitzchak prays on their behalf and Rivka becomes pregnant. Her pregnancy is a difficult one. She questions her desire to have children and she seeks answers through God. While we don't know what Rivka felt during those painful barren years, we do read of the pain she is experiencing during pregnancy, causing what sounds like a complaint. Vayishrotzu habanim b'kirba, vatomer, im kain, lama ze anochi, vatelech lidroshet Hashem. 25:22. But the children struggled in her womb and she said, if so, why do I exist? And she went to inquire of God. The problem with her pregnancy is described as the fetus struggling in her womb. The source of the struggle is attributed to different causes. Rabbi Yochanan says the fetuses were trying to literally kill each other. Reish Lakish sees the struggle as a spiritual one, each trying to deny the other. Rabbi Brechia opines that the struggle in the womb explains the differences between Esav and Yaakov, which were predetermined and not based on any actions or even a rationality. Rashi brings the Medrash that Rivka did not know that she was having twins, and she could not explain how the same child would kick when she passed the house of God and when she passed a house of idol worship. Im kein lamazanochi, why then am I me, is stated by Rivka, and it begs to be interpreted. Rashi says she's questioning why she desired to be pregnant. Ramban rejects this explanation without explaining, but it seems to be that he understands the mind of the infertile woman. She is willing to accept all forms of pain and suffering in order to deliver a healthy child. Ramban quotes the Ibn Ezra that Rivka questioned other women and determined that her pregnancy was unusual, and she isn't questioning her desire to conceive, rather why her pregnancy is different than other women's. This answer too is rejected, and the Ramban suggests that Rivka is questioning her very essence and purpose in the world. According to Sferno, she was afraid that the child would die and that would put her in danger of dying in childbirth. Rivka's response to her pain, dilemma, and confusion is to seek out God. How does one do this? Either she went to the rabbinic leaders at that time, Shaman Aver, or Avraham, or she herself prayed. Why doesn't she turn to Yitzchak? Perhaps she was embarrassed to complain about this pregnancy that they had prayed for, waited, and anticipated for so many years. Rivka receives a prophecy, which explains the battle in her womb. She is indeed pregnant with two children who will be in eternal struggle, with the younger eventually being in control. 25:23. Vayomer Hashem la, shnei goyim bevitnech, ushnei leumich mima'ayach yiparedu, uleum mileum yi'amatz, v'rav ya'avod sa'ir. And Hashem answered her, two nations are in your womb. Two separate people have issued from your body. One people shall be mightier than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. It seems that Rivka did not share this prophecy with Yitzchak. Since she didn't share the problem, she can't share the solution, and one does not share prophecy with a prophet. Just like Avram, who did not share his prophecy with Sarah, Rivka does not include Yitzchak in her knowledge. Perhaps she actually wants the twins to have an equal opportunity and an equal upbringing and doesn't want Yitzchak to favor one over the other. The Torah tells us, though, that Rivka loved Yaakov absolutely and Yitzchak loved Esav because of the trappings of his mouth. 25:28. Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav kitzayid befiv, v'Rivka ohevet et Yitzchak. And Yitzchak favored Esav because he had a taste for game, or game was in his mouth, but Rivka favored Yaakov. Unlike Yitzchak, Rivka recognized the true nature of her sons. This distinction, as well as the relationship that Rivka and Yitzchak had as results in the story of the stolen blessings. Rivka overhears Yitzchak telling Esav that he's planning to bless him. Rivka has Yaakov, dressed up with goat hair and in Esav's clothing, deceive his blind father and appropriate the blessings for himself. This story has many different approaches. My favorite is of Rev Hirsch, born in 1808, died in 1888 in Germany, who explains that Rivka's whole goal was actually not to get the bracha for Yaakov, because you cannot fool God who fulfills the blessings, but rather to demonstrate to Yitzchak how easily he could be tricked. When Esav returns after Yaakov had already received the bracha, Yitzchak in verse 33 is seized by a tremendous fear. Vayecharad Yitzchak charada gedola ad ma'od. Vayomer, mi efo hu hatzad tzayid, vayavar bi va'ochal. B'terem tavo va'arvarecha gam baruch yiyeh. Yitzchak was seized with violent trembling. Who was it then, he demanded, that hunted game and brought it to me? Moreover, I ate of it before you came, and I blessed him, and he must remain blessed. In other words, Yitzchak suddenly understood a truth. And Rav Hirsch says, and I quote, the discovery of the deception was unavoidable. Even if the carrying out of the masquerade were to be successful, as soon as Esav returns, everything was inevitably bound to be disclosed. Rivka must have known this full well. And altogether, how crude was the whole comedy? A couple of goatskins? What but the most absolute naivete could be taken in by that? What could her intention have been by playing such a comedy? What else but just the comedy itself, and only thus, if just the inevitable discovery was what was before reckoned on? Only then does the whole story make sense from Rivka's point of view, and it becomes understandable, if not completely approved of in the circumstance, quite excusable. End quote. It's only through the deception of Yitzchak by Yaakov that Yitzchak understood the depth of Esav's deception all of these years. And building on this idea, Rav Yosef Ber Soloveitchik, born in 1903, died in 1993 in the United States, explained that Yitzchak and Rivka were in disagreement as to who would be the last forefather. Was it to be Avram, Yitzchak, and... Yitzchak felt it would be a good idea to have a strong person who knew his way around arms and hunting to be the ancestor of the nation. Would it be so terrible to have a Jew who had a little strength in his genetic makeup? Rivka, who grew up among people like Esav, thought this to be a bad plan. Discussions, though, would not convince Yitzchak. Rivka, by dressing Yaakov up, showed Yitzchak that if necessary, Yaakov could take on the attributes of Esav, as Yitzchak himself, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, but the hands are the hands of Esav. But an Esav can never become a Yaakov. Yitzchak understands this at the end, and therefore blesses Yaakov. Thus, the whole plot becomes justifiable and understandable. Yet, there are those who want to say that Yaakov acted improperly. Accordingly, he was actually punished for stealing the brachot. Yaakov is exiled for 20 years as a punishment for tricking his father. And during those years, he is cheated, tricked, and fooled by his father-in-law. He undergoes 2 more years of hardship before returning to his father. Chazal called this midah kineged midah, a measure for measure. Eventually, the years of exile are over, but Yaakov's suffering has not yet ended. His beloved son Yosef is sold into slavery, and just as he tricked his father using a goat, so too he is tricked by a goat into thinking that Yosef is dead. And Yaakov spends the next 22 years of his life mourning this supposedly dead Yosef. Nechama Leibowitz, born in 1905, dies in 1997 in Jerusalem, in her Iyunim L'Sefer Breishit, sets forth the price that Yaakov pays, and I quote, "From the subsequent years of Yaakov's life, we see that he spent the rest of his days in sorrow and suffering, measure for measure. He is deceived by his own sons concerning what happened to Yosef. Laban deceives him time after time. Even Leah, his wife, deceives him by disguising herself as Rachel. The Medrash depicts this conversation between them. Yaakov says, 'Daughter of a swindler, why did you deceive me?' Leah says, 'What about you? Why did you deceive your father? And now you say, why did you deceive me? Did your father not say your brother came treacherously?'" Nechama continues, and she quotes the following Medrash. "Anyone who says that the Holy One, blessed be He, is lenient, he will lose his life. Rather, God is patient and eventually collects his debts. Yaakov caused Esav to emit just one single cry, as it's written, 'And he cried a great and bitter cry.' And when was this repaid to him? In Shushan, the capital, when it says, 'And Mordechai cried a great and bitter cry.'" Yet, it does seem like God plays a role in our story. Coincidentally, Yitzchak is blind, which is a prerequisite for the story. Yitzchak is unable to identify the twins based on their voice. Esav does not return while Yaakov is in his father's presence. And when Yitzchak does try to identify his son, he smells the smell of the field. Vayomer, Reach, Re'ei Reach B'ni Kerech HaSadeh Asher Baruchu Hashem. He says, look, the smell of my son is like the smell of the fields that God had blessed. He should really have smelled dead animal skin. God obviously was involved here. And the fact that Rivka just happened to overhear the conversation between Esav and Yaakov, and that she is able in educating Yitzchak. One might be tempted to find miracles in these coincidences. Sometimes, even when we do the correct thing in a situation, it has negative ramifications. King David, for all the good that he did, was forbidden to build the Beit HaMikdash. The Nazir has to bring a sin offering. Life is not black and white. And sometimes the choices we make are not between good and bad, but between bad and worse. Either way, the Torah does not condemn Rivka or Yaakov for their behavior outright. And it's Rivka here who is going to be the who decides who is going to be the continuation of the nation after a miraculous birth. It is on her initiative. She boldly intervenes to assure the right succession of the covenant. Thereby, her decision changes the course of Jewish history and the religion for good. It has always been the women who have to take responsibility, make difficult decisions, and sometimes to maintain the covenantal community. Thank you for studying Parsha Toldot with me today. And now for the fourth question. Why couldn't God make Yitzchak wake up one morning thinking, I should really bless Yaakov and not Esav? Why does the bracha have to come to Yaakov in this deceitful manner?